Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
One more victory for Dan Lanning. He's about wins, not clicks. You're doing it for clicks, calling random trees redwoods, the mighty redwood. Do not disrespect.
Russ Dellinger.
George is the same thing, if not more, right? I mean, he's got two schools left, and they're going to want him to fight, keep that auto bid. Who knows? If Washington State goes 10-2 or something next year, they could get it.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Whatever. They have the best resume. They absolutely should be number one. I haven't put Georgia or Michigan in my playoff bracket yet. I do a playoff bracket every week in the 40-yard dash. Why should I?
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Invesco QQQ. We want to start with a little look back, but also a look ahead. And it features Notre Dame and young Marcus Freeman, our Irish football coach. Obviously, the game ended on a bizarre sequence where Notre Dame put 10 men out in the field against Ohio State's defense on the final two plays at the one-yard line. And there was a lot of discussion, and there still was a lot of confusion until Monday when, much to his credit, and I think much to his maturity, and Marcus Freeman owned the mistake, discussed the mistake, met with reporters individually, stood at his press conference and handled it. I thought he handled a coaching gaffe about as well as possible. Now, a lot of people would point out, and we did, there were other mistakes in the Ohio State game. Do you run when you're trying to run out the clock instead of throw? Those are, to me, more strategic decisions that could, you know, you also say, Sam Hartman's our best player. We're going to win the game with him. Those are things that happen in football. Having 10 men on the field for two plays at the goal line, no one of your coaches immediately recognizing, especially in that kind of a package, in that small of an area of the field, that you only have 10, so you can solve the problem in the second play, was an egregious coaching error and played a significant role. It's a hard one to overcome when you're a young coach. It's hard to be a head football coach. And when you haven't have a ton of experience doing it, like Marcus Freeman, these things are the questions. Can you handle it? He is hardly the first young coach to mess up at the end of a game. It's just rarely are you in position where you're learning it at Notre Dame with, we'll see what the ratings come out, but I am fairly confident this will be well over 10 million people will be watching, especially at that time of night.
Yeah.
Yeah, they came out, I believe, right?
Oh, did it?
Yeah. Return.
It was 10 million peaking at 14 during the last sequences of the game.
Right. Brian Kelly learned to coach at Grand Valley State. Yeah. Now, he won two national titles, but who the hell knows what happened in year two there? Brian Kelly, I think, is one of the best game coaches. But here's the thing. Brian Kelly never came close to beating a team like that. He was 3-11 against top 10 teams. So Marcus Freeman has other attributes, and he's hired for those. Can you get Notre Dame to the point where you're blowing a game? That's better than just getting blown out, right? And so this was the thing. Now, just for the record, because it's pretty interesting when you go through this scenario, because it's a pretty uncommon scenario. So Freeman said the first play, no one noticed, and that was complete failure. And then no one noticed they were lined up that way again until almost just before Ohio State had gotten in their formation. Now, the defense can only sub if they have the time to sub. And if the offense had subbed, then the referees will stop the game. Notre Dame could get somebody in. But at that point, the only option was to run the defensive lineman in, at which he would not have gotten across the line of scrimmage. And had Ohio State run a play and he not made it over the line of scrimmage, it would have been a free play, offsides, right? Yep. So the real option was you have a signal to alert your defensive captain to cause an offsides. Just jump the line and hit an Ohio State player. You have to touch an Ohio State player to cause the offside. And Notre Dame did not have that in place. And that's what the failure was. They now have it in place, as you'd imagine. So that was the explanation. I thought it was interesting. He really broke down all of it. I think it speaks a lot to why so many people at Notre Dame are really rooting for Marcus Freeman to work, and why people around the country are rooting for Marcus Freeman to work. And you hope this isn't a mistake that gets you. I recall Kirby Smart having some tough calls early in his career when he was learning. I mean, it was a fake punt against Alabama.
2017, yeah.
Yeah. Nobody's saying that anymore. So it's a process, right? And I think what's interesting, that's the backstory, and I'll let both you guys talk about it. But then going forward, they have pretty much the game of the week against Duke. And Notre Dame is really good. And Notre Dame could still make the playoff if a lot happens and they win out. They still get USC. They still get Clemson. They got Duke. It's a pretty good schedule. And if they're 11-1, they're going to be a contender on this, but they got to be 11-1. He needs to show, as big as last week's game for Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame, he needs to show that last week's game will not impact this week's game the way last year's loss to Ohio State impacted the next game, which was a loss to Marshall. Pat, what was your thoughts on how Coach Freeman handled everything on Monday after not handling it, certainly the execution, so well on Saturday?
Yeah. Extreme credit to him and to Notre Dame, because if this is a media point, let's start with that. This is a media point that, hey, we have seen it in a situation like that, a gut-busting defeat, one that your coaches directly impacted the loss. People can hide. People can run out of time. People can be like, oh, no, we're not going to be able to do that today. Sorry. Very easily. And Notre Dame didn't do that. And as you said, Marcus Freeman stood in there and answered everything and did individual interviews, talked to Heather Dinich from ESPN in his office. You know, that's a great accountability on his part. And, you know, he owned it. That was a egregious error. The actual sequence there, and everything that transpired. I mean, there is a lot of fog of war stuff that happens at crucial points in a football game, especially a hurry-up situation. And Notre Dame was going from a rush 3, drop 8, pass prevent situation on a 3rd and 19 to a goal line situation. So you are swapping personnel, ideally, significantly there. So they complete the pass down to the 1, spike the ball. Notre Dame calls a timeout. That's where I just can't understand how. You have called timeout. You've taken your last timeout. Where's the guys in the box? Where's the people on the personnel on the sidelines? Just to count the guys. Make sure, do we have our jumbo personnel out there? Do we have our goal line personnel? Like, to miss that twice, that's the thing, is – one play, okay, boy, hey, that's bad. But two plays, that's where it's like, oh my gosh, there must have just been absolute paralysis or panic going on out there. And let's be frank, Ohio State missed it the first time too. They run a sprint out to the opposite side of the field. Nobody looked at that and said, you know, called in a check and said, hey, run it right here where they don't have a player. So fog of war on Ohio State's sideline as well. These things happen, but to have it happen for two straight plays, that's where you're like, okay, yeah, you need to have a plan in place to figure out how to cause a penalty, but you need to have a better quality control of from your staff standpoint of just making sure we've got A, the personnel we want on the field, and B, the right number of personnel.
It's so fascinating to see how they'll respond. This is like... has all the makings, right, for like a complete deflation the next week. You get up for this huge top 10 showdown at home. All eyes of the country are on you. And you not only lose at the last minute with a last yard, but you do it right in such like deflating fashion by having not enough men on the field, like one of the more simple things in football. And then you have to go on the road to a team that is playing incredibly well, as well defensively, probably as any team in the country. Mike Elko has them just rolling. It's going to be fascinating to see how they respond. And like Dan had mentioned, they did not respond well last year in some of these situations. But this Duke Notre Dame game, you know, take the under. I mean, I think it's like 55. I mean, these two defenses are playing lights out. I think Duke's averaging like giving up 9 points a game. And I think Notre Dame's getting up around like 13 points a game. But yeah, I'm really interested to see the response here and how that response from Notre Dame will shape their season.
Yeah. Duke's biggest home game in a long, long time was Labor Day night when they smoked Clemson. This is bigger than that one because now they're still undefeated, and game day is coming, which only comes for basketball to Duke, and now here they are. And Notre Dame had better be ready.
It's not just a defense either. I mean, like Riley Leonard, the Duke quarterback, is getting discussed as an NFL by NFL scouts as even a potential. Now this is, as everyone in college football knows, an unbelievable amount of great quarterbacks right now. And they've spread out around the country. Everyone's playing. They find their spot. There's better quarterbacks. Pat, you talked about like training's better, 7-on-7, all this stuff. There's also, if you watch on Sundays, an incredible whole bunch of teams looking for quarterbacks that are pretty sick of the quarterback they have. Riley Leonard is getting discussed by NFL scouts, the potential first-round pick. Now, we'll see whether that pans out. But this is not just a really good defense. This is a defense, and then I know he's only thrown for 2 touchdowns, but he's accurate, he's mobile, he's got all the stuff. This is a really good quarterback, too. It's a great quarterback matchup, which you would not have expected. The one thing, there was one line in there that I thought was interesting by Freeman, just to go back real briefly, and we'll get more to Duke. He had this line about how they didn't count to 10, I think. He said, "We as a staff need to be held to the same standard as our players. Fight the drift. You can't get caught watching the game." So everyone goes, don't you have a guy that just counts the plays, counts the players? And they probably do. And that guy might have just been like so nervous he's, you know, chomping his gum and not counting.
Do teams normally have analysts or support who count players? I wonder. That's a good question.
I would think, how many guys do you have in a box usually for a team? Like 6? I mean, three or four?
Eight. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe. Or you have someone on the sideline who's it's not Notre Dame. They get student assistant. Like, you got to get a pretty good ACT score to get in there. You should be able to count to 11, I would think.
Can we find one business major who can count to 11?
Anyone down there be able to count to 11? You get to stand on the sideline right near Marcus Freeman now. You get a really good seat to the game. Volunteers. Come on down the athletic department. But, yeah, this is a really good guy. Because he's like, they had 0-3 and outs. They had no penalties. They ran for 176 yards against Ohio State. Like, they should have won that game. Duke is very good. Mike Elko has done an exceptional job. Anytime we're even talking Duke, someone's doing a great job. That is an athletic-looking team that we saw against Clemson. Like, you're like, wait, this isn't Duke?
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me when James Franklin got to Vanderbilt, and all of a sudden you're like,
wait a minute.
Oh, wow, they got some athletes here. Wait, that guy can run for Vanderbilt? Like, okay. They didn't look like Vanderbilt. This doesn't look like Duke. Interesting thing. There's one job opening right now. It's at Michigan State. Michigan State has got a lot of money. They got Big Ten money. We talk about the Big Two and the rest, right? They could be freed up from this massive deal. There's a lot of Spartan fans really interested in Mike Elko. Nothing like throwing this into the punch bowl for poor Blue Devil fan, but what do you think?
It's out there. I mean, there's no doubt about it. That's the name that's been circulating the most right now, I think, on the wish list. He coached at Notre Dame. You know, he's recruited in that area. He's obviously done a hell of a job as a coach. He is a coach's coach. You know, he's a football guy. He's not going to go win your press conference, but he's obviously going to win quite a few games. So I can understand the attraction for sure. The question for Elko, you know, they, boy, it's tricky. And James Franklin, of course, he had Penn State sitting out there. That was a no-brainer to go from Vanderbilt to Penn State. But, you know, can you stay at Duke and build something real like Stanford was for a decade, like Notre Dame has been off and on forever? Or do you say, gosh, this is tapped out here. This is Duke, man. I need to go somewhere else. But you kind of got to figure out, I think, what's the shelf life of a football coach at Duke, and then calibrate, you know, what next move is worth it.
Well, yeah, and not to put down Michigan State, but obviously that's going to be somewhat of a rebuild there, and I don't think that Michigan State is necessarily in like the tier one of the, you know, blue blood. So could Mike Elko just wait a little bit for a better job eventually? Mm-hmm. Number one, and number two, yeah, I mean, like, you guys have been to Duke's campus in that area. Like, it's an amazing place. Like, the campus is the most beautiful campus I think I've ever been on. They have great basketball facilities. Can he build something there? Like, it kind of reminds me of, I mean, it's not the exact same, but like, you know, Frank Beamer showing up at Virginia Tech and then winning, and then all of a sudden all these things get built and, you know, you establish something. So, I that's a curious one there. And it's amazing. They won, I was looking it up, they won six in a row going back to last year, and they've won 8 of 9 going back to the middle of last year. And their only loss in there is a 2-point loss to Pitt. So it's incredible what he's doing there. Riley Leonard, you know, played really well, but defensively is where their bread is buttered. And of course, you know, Mike Elko, former A&M defensive coordinator in Notre Dame, right? He was at Notre Dame for a while.
Yeah. We'll see. Michigan State is not in the top tier of jobs in the new Big Ten, particularly.
Yeah, right.
Which is why I never understand why Michigan State want to expand. Mm.
Let's go ahead and bring in Phil Knight Incorporated.
Yeah.
Let's USC. Bring in USC, a hot Washington program, and underachieving UCLA, but should be good.
Yeah, like, why knock yourself down the thing? And let me give you another one. I was going to do this later. But Michigan State is on national television a whole bunch this year on NBC. Now, obviously, this season got worse than expected, but it wasn't expected much. NBC's Saturday night game of the week this year, this week's Big Ten game of the week, Michigan State, Iowa. Now there's one appointment viewing. Iowa's coming off a 31-0 loss, and Michigan State's coming off a 31-9 loss. Okay, this is why we're expanding, because TV networks said we have to expand because we're going to pay you all this money. And this is what NBC has gotten this year out of the Big Ten. Not Notre Dame. Notre Dame and Ohio State delivered, but that game was at Notre Dame. That was part of their Notre Dame deal. This is their Big Ten games. NBC, West Virginia at Penn State, blowout. Charlotte at Maryland, I'm sure you watched. Syracuse at Purdue, Maryland at Michigan State last week.
Yeah.
Now you're getting Michigan State at Iowa.
Ooh. Those are your $350 million. I think the price tag was $350 million, right? $1 million.
Absolute dogs. Yeah. NBC got cooked on this deal. Okay, so you got all that. Later in the year, Michigan State is already slated to be on NBC for their Ohio State game, primetime on November 11th. And when Penn State visits, they move the game to Friday night, and they're playing the game in Ford Field in Detroit. So here's the thing. If you're Michigan State, without these new teams, you've got four NBC games. Now, it's going to showcase a horrible program this year. Okay, but if you get four, mostly primetime, other than the Maryland one, I think they're all primetime. Big primetime games on NBC. When you add more teams, you get fewer games on primetime. Because next year, they're going to be like, nah, we'll have Oregon play USC in that slot. Like, I still don't understand what the expansion did for some of these schools.
Yeah. No, it increases competition, decreases platform for them in terms of prime platforms.
Increases revenue, but... Have you been to Michigan State? They got money. Like, it's not.
Well, and it didn't increase revenue in the latest realignment. I mean, they as a conference, nobody's in the That's Big true. Ten, for instance. No, yeah, nobody's yeah. revenue, nobody's share increased in Washington and Oregon. Took half of what everybody else is making. They're making a little more than they would have in the Pac-12. I mean, you know, it none of it makes sense. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. But all these programs, Maryland's losing. They got two NBC games, so they're not going to get, you know. Go ahead, Pat. Same thing.
No, that's it. That's the kind of thing. I wish I could remember where I was, maybe at SEC Media Days or somewhere this summer. And someone whose affiliations were with the SEC / ESPN was kind of chortling, like, did you see what NBC got stuck with from the Big Ten? How about that?
Oh, yeah, they're loving it.
I mean, oh, yeah. There's people that they're paying close attention to that, although everybody would like a piece of Colorado right now. And nobody was saying that back in, well, yeah, that's some true. People were thinking that.
That's true. If they get Dion to go to Beast Lansing, unlikely, but all of a sudden everyone's, no, I just don't, yeah, I don't know what, I remain confused at why there was such a lockstep from the middle of the Big Ten to go, hey, let's add more teams that'll take our time slots, make it less likely we win the league and make the playoff. And not really bring us any more money that we didn't need anyway. But hey, what do I know? I don't work in athletic administration at these schools. Call me a genius. Yeah. I mean, let's put it this way.
If somebody put us in charge of an athletic department, it would be a lot of fun, but I'm sure we'd be like bankrupt in 3 weeks or something.
Would I really do worse than Michigan State right now? Because I would never fire Izzo.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Probably Izzo, wouldn't have given Mel Tucker $90 million.
Like, let's not kid ourselves. These guys aren't doing a real good job. Like, they're that it's like people when I said like we should expand the playoff, I think it would help maybe alleviate conference realignment and all these different things. Well, I don't know if that would work out. Well, let me tell you what did work out. Your plan. Mm-hmm. Nuke the whole thing. Okay. There's two conferences dead already. Maybe mine would have worked a little better. Your plan, not good. So yeah, maybe the $95 million to risk the LSU, maybe not. Anyway, I want to posit this question. I'll start with Pat. Should Florida State be number one? They are currently not ranked number one. They're ranked number four. But considering they have beaten LSU on a neutral, actually number five, I'm sorry, not even number four.
Mm.
They have beat LSU. They have beat Clemson. And they actually dropped the spot. They got jumped by Ohio State this week. Now, if we're going to look, this is the top. Georgia has a victory over South Carolina. Mm-hmm. They're number one. I get it. It's Georgia. They're going for three straight. I get it. Relax, dog fans. Michigan's done nothing. Played no one. They're number two. Yeah, I get it. I get it. Won the big beat Ohio State quite. Didn't beat them this year. Texas has a victory at Alabama. They're number three. Ohio State now has the victory over the undermanned Irish and the Holy Ghost. They're four. Florida State has the best resume, and they're fifth. Now, far be it for me to understand the polling process of this of our fellow sports writers, but like, is it too much to have the courage to just say, hey, Georgia, hey, Michigan, yeah, you haven't proven it this year yet. We'll sort it out. I mean, this is a non-binding thing.
Well, that's the thing. That's no, that this is a long time pet peeve of mine. And vote based on what you have seen happen this year, mm-hmm. not what you thought coming in. Because, well, Florida State's only number eight coming in. You know, I just didn't have them ahead of Georgia or Michigan, so I can't put them ahead of them now. Yeah, you can. They beat the crap out of LSU in Orlando. Then they go into Death Valley and beat a desperate Clemson team. Easily the best resume. They struggled at Boston College. Fine. That was a sleepwalker where they got ahead, fell asleep. They're looking ahead to Clemson. Whatever. They have the best resume. They absolutely should be number one. I haven't put Georgia or Michigan in my playoff bracket yet. I do a playoff bracket every week in the 40-yard dash. Why should I? What have they done? Those two, USC hadn't played anybody yet. Oklahoma hadn't played anybody yet. Big names, big laundry, you know, famous uniforms and all that. But they haven't done anything yet, so why put them there? And to your point, Dan, it's not like you can't change it once they do play somebody. Georgia's finally going to play on the road this week. They're going to play at Auburn. Probably should win, but we've all been to Auburn. We've seen the atmosphere there. You win down there, a little bit more respect. Michigan is going to Nebraska. 80-plus thousand people in the stands. Nebraska's not that good, but still, go leave the Big House and do something. Now we can talk. Until now, what's the point of having those two ranked ahead of Florida State?
Yeah, it's one of my pet peeves, too. I wish we'd start the season with the old blank slate. Don't look at the past. Don't look at preseason polls. I do that with my top 10. I mean, in our latest top 10 at Yahoo, here's the teams that I have outside of the top 10, not included. USC, Georgia, Michigan. Here's teams that are in our top 10. Duke, Miami, Oregon. So, I mean, they've done things. I mean, you go through, and I have Florida State at number one. I think Florida State is the two best wins together, right? At Clemson against LSU at a neutral site. Ohio State's my number two team. I think they have the best single win, right, so far this season at Notre Dame. My number three, Washington, not the great. Their best win is probably at Michigan State. I mean, it's not great, and we're seeing that now, but man, they just look so good, and they at least traveled to a Power Five program. I mean, most Power Fives do not have that, you know. And then I have Texas, Utah to round out the top five. But yeah, I try to look at best wins and good wins, and try not to look at the past. But I have been getting shelled by the Georgia fans. They are up my, you know what? Where are the dogs, Ross?
I think that's
dogs,
it.
The dogs.
It's just people not willing to, like, just relax. I mean,
right. Who cares what the rankings are on September 26th?
Play somebody. You haven't played anybody. Yeah. It's okay. Some right. years you do. Some years you'd benefit right. from this. Some years you don't.
Remember, Georgia
was
going to
play
Clemson.
Oklahoma.
Remember? So,
yeah, they were going to, you know, yeah, they were going to play Oklahoma.
Yeah.
They played Notre Dame.
Georgia doesn't duck games. It's just that it didn't work out because the SEC basically canceled the game against Oklahoma.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
I love the Miami choice.
Yeah.
They're playing great. And that Texas A&M, after they really control Auburn last week, looks better. And they have cooked everybody and then handily beat A&M. How about Fresno State?
Yeah.
I know.
Hey,
they're tempted.
You know what?
I was tempted.
29-0, they beat Arizona State. USC gave up 28 points to Arizona State.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. We're going to get to this maybe in a minute if we have time. But a 12-team playoff this year, Fresno State's number 12. Buckle up.
These guys are good.
Like, this is a good football team, man. And so you go, well, they won at Purdue, and they won at Arizona State in a shutout. And they've crushed, they barely beat Eastern Washington. They crushed Kent State. Like, well, you know, that's better than what Michigan's done. Do I like Michigan over Fresno State? I do. Yeah. I don't know how you do the whole poll.
I was tempted to put Fresno in instead of Miami, or put Washington State in instead of Miami. Both of those teams have looked good and have pretty dang good resumes, actually.
Washington State beating Wisconsin and Oregon State.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back after this message. All right, Ross, you are in Chicago for more playoff meetings. What's the buzz out there that are starting now? They're still trying to figure out this playoff for next year.
Dan, they are talking about guardrails.
Okay.
No, not really. They might get to that later this week. Here in Chicago, staring at my hotel room now at the Big Ten headquarters here in Rosemont, a Chicago suburb. So because of the realignment, you know, they're considering changing the 6+6 12-team playoff model. I think the biggest potential option, or the most likely option that does have a wide array of support in the room is the 5+7. Basically, you're just removing one automatic qualifier that would go to a conference champion, and you're adding an at-large berth. So five automatic qualifiers for the five highest ranked conference champions and seven at-large berths. There's still some hurdles. It's not a given. It needs unanimity. And That could be trouble because Mike Oresko, the American, has certainly come out publicly and said he will continue to fight to keep the 6+6, which if you kept the 6+6, then basically your sixth automatic berth would potentially go to a second group of five team who may not even be ranked in the top 25. If you went back 10 years and you'd computed things, a lot of times that, so that's not going to fly with a lot of people in that room, but Oresko is going to fight for it. And then there's George Klyavkov, who was supposed to be here. And still has a vote in the PAC 2, right? Is exploring ways to rebuild and stay together. Maybe even a two-team conference for at least 2 years. The NCAA would recognize it for at least 2 years. That there's a bylaw that where they can take 2 years to get back up to eight members. So is there going to be a two-team league? How does that work? Does that impact some kind of playoff form? Does that impact the change to the 5+7? So I went back, though, and I computed the last 10 years, what a 5+7 playoff would look like each year. And I did the figures and did the math. Now, this is a flawed model, okay, because I included all the teams that are moving into their new league. I included them in their new league in all these calculations. So, like Oklahoma, a couple of the years actually won the SEC's auto bid the last 10 years. So, it's a little flawed, but here's some of the numbers. I think they're pretty eye-opening of what a 5+7 would mean. The SEC would have gotten, there's 120 qualifying spots, 12-team playoff, 10 years. SEC would have gotten 38 teams qualified for the playoff. Big 10 would have gotten 35. Big 12, 17. ACC, 14. The group of five would have gotten 12, one each year. They got no at-larges. So the SEC and Big 10, in Notre Dame, by the way, four. Notre Dame would have gotten in four times. So the SEC in the Big Ten combined for 73 spots out of the 120, about 61% of the spots would have gone to two conferences. And that's what happens when you have an 18-team Big Ten and a 16-team SEC that includes Oklahoma and Texas. We're consolidating the big brands, and so, of course, they're going to dominate, right? So that was kind of fascinating to compute those numbers. I don't necessarily expect a decision out of Chicago here this week. Could it happen? Yes. It's a two-day meeting. It should wrap up tomorrow evening-ish, probably. So, it'll be an interesting, as one person put it to me last month, you know, this should be an easy decision just to go to 5+7. It makes sense. If you have one fewer league, especially one fewer power league, you go to 5+7. But as one of the commissioners said, there's nothing easy with this group.
That's the truth. And, you know, the thing, the big complication there is, of course, as you said, you have to have unanimity. And that's the thing that's coming off the books, right, Ross? That it will no longer need unanimous votes to change.
Right. So you need unanimity only for a certain amount of certain changes. You need unanimity for revenue changes with the revenue distribution model, which they already changed. You need unanimity. And in the format, you need unanimity of all the 11. But that's only, like you said, for two more years, right? The contract, all this ends after the 2025 playoff, and there's not a new contract. Right there's nothing starting in 2026 and beyond. So actually the thought is, if you have a block of commissioners, whether that's George Klyavkov, whether that's Mike Oresko and others in the group of five who block this change from 6+6 to 5+7, do the big boys say, okay, that's fine, in 2026 you're not with us?
Yeah right. That's gonna be the risk.
Plenty of conference room strong arming going on there. But this again, you know, if they would have done this right to begin with and not let the contract get to this point, you know, but again, and these are the people that are in charge. That's the amazing thing. And you talk to them individually. Oh, that's smart guy. And then you get the self-interest together and the log jams. And it's just like, oh my God, you people can't do anything for the betterment of the whole.
And let's keep in mind, too, one thing that everybody should be reminded of. You know, these commissioners, they work for right? Their conferences. They work for the school presidents and their athletic directors. And Oresko's a good example. I think no matter what, he would fight for the 6+6 to stay for 2 years. But I've kind of been told he's getting pushback from his presidents in the league to fight for it. He's being told, you need to fight for this. We want 6+6. We want 2 Group of 5 auto bids. We agree to this format for the next 2 years. So, you know, you got to keep it. And George is the same thing, if not more, right? I mean, he's got two schools left, and they're going to want him to fight. Keep that auto bid. Who knows? If Washington State goes 10-2 or something next year, they could get it.
Yeah. Washington State, Oregon State, George, it's a miracle you still have a job. Get in there and fight for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I'm George, I'm like walking in with like a Bush Light tall boy, cracking it at the table, maybe some fast food or something.
Yeah.
Start checking my fantasy line. What are you guys doing over there? I'm just throwing a grenade. I'm fired in like 9 months.
Yeah.
I'm running a 2-team league over here. Call me when you, I'm not. Feet up on the table. Sankey, move down a little bit here. I need a little space. Checking my fantasy football lineup. Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Yeah, they should have taken the 6-6. I believe, again, could you be smarter than an athletic director or administrator? I screamed to high heavens on this podcast to annoying amounts. Take the 6-6. They didn't take it. Now look at them.
No.
But it's hard. Oresko, I mean... You risk them just saying forget it, no auto bids, and then you can see where this is headed. It's not going to be 61% to the SEC and Big Ten. It's going to be 75%.
So a note about what would suck for the sport. Yeah. A note about a 5+7 over the last 10 years. The numbers I've crunched, I failed to mention. When you do the calculations, when you consider all the teams going into a new league in their new league, it obviously weakens the group of five. The group of five has been weakened, right? I mean, the top teams from the American left, BYU, joined the conference. Mm-hmm. So the group of five have been weakened. So when you do the 5+7, the fifth G5 auto bid over the last 10 years, four of the 10 years, the fifth auto bid would have been ranked 19th or worse. Imagine what the sixth auto bid of a G5 would be. Again, probably half the years, that team's not ranked in the top 25.
So the group of five lost BYU, UCF, Houston, Cincinnati, and SMU.
Yep.
But they gained Washington State, Oregon State, and then cash considerations later and like a future draft pick. I don't know. But yeah, that was the trade.
A ratings note that I am noting because I won our ratings guessing game.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
I did.
What was it?
Colorado. This is Ross actually just tweeted this. SportsMediaWatch.com. Colorado, Oregon, 5.2 rating, 10.03 million.
Holy cow.
Isn't that unbelievable?
For a dog of a game.
Absolute blowout in the first quarter. Yeah.
In the midst of a crowded afternoon of other good games.
Dion.
Yeah. Wow. Imagine if that game was close.
I took, what did you take, Pat? I took, I took like 8.
You took 8.2, and then I cut you off at the knees and went 8.3.
Wow. Yeah, I took 10.2.
All right. Well, that was really a thrilling game. This is about as thrilling of a game as the Colorado Oregon game. I want to. There was a great line. I got to say this line. They did Oregon, you know, which is all about wins, not clicks, released a 5-minute and 44-second movie about their victory over Colorado. It's a good thing that they're just. This is Woody Hayes up there. Just
that's it. They're only talking with their pads and their helmets.
Only talking with their pads. No. I mean, look, it was a good video. Very good work. Dan Lanning's pregame speech included, I wish they had had this. This line, which I've never heard in my life. I thought I heard every football cliche known to man. He was talking about togetherness. I ain't ever seen a Redwood stand alone. That was his line. Pacific Northwest coaching accent. I was like, wait, what? I was like, I guess you're right, because why would you plow the air? Like, that's how the forest
wait, no. process works. I have a contest. I'm going to contest that. I stayed in Eugene in an Airbnb.
Was this when you're on the bus?
In the neighborhood, yeah. Wait, before I was on the bus, yeah. In a neighborhood where there was literally a standalone, one big tall redwood in the middle of the neighborhood. I took a picture.
Really?
Actually. Yes. And I have it on my phone. It's in somebody's yard right in the middle of this neighborhood. So Dan Lanning, get your facts straight, buddy.
Dan Lanning.
Right there in his own town.
Sits on a throne of lies. He said I ain't. He just said he ain't ever seen one, didn't say it existed. Apparently, and he went on further. This is very interesting, like botany kind of thing. The redwood strength is his roots because it ties to the other tree's roots. Mm-hmm. That's why they grow so tall. Mm-hmm. I did not know this until Dan Lanning brought it up, so I appreciate that. But apparently, what I love is Ross says he took two city buses to get to his were you at a hotel or you at an Airbnb?
No, Airbnb.
Yeah. Oh, that was why you couldn't get there. So, and then all of a sudden people were disputing it. And then
everybody was.
He had like a bus ticket that you took two buses.
What the hell? Why would I lie about that? God, people
dispute anything
in this country.
People dispute anything.
Jeez.
Like, you didn't walk that far.
If you took two buses, you did it wrong. You could have walked the whole way.
Taking the number 8 express right to Odds.
You know what? Did I keep my bus ticket? I think I
thought you had like a map online about where
I do.
You
I have a map, but I also have pictures from the bus.
I know.
I have two pictures
that could be
from
any
the bus.
How do we know what a city bus in Eugene looks like?
I should have kept damn bus ticket. I may have. I'm going to rummage through my bag after we're done.
All right. Put it online.
Show them.
People calling fraud on us.
Ongoing saga.
Really is.
I'm going to start taking the bus to every game. My next game will be probably Texas, Oklahoma. I'm going to take the bus there, too,
in
Dallas.
You know what? You might need to, because getting to the Cotton Bowl, getting to that state fair, when you get there. But
I love
easy.
When they have public transportation to sporting events. Usually it's a subway if you cover pro sports. College sports, not so good.
No.
Smaller cities. There are buses sometimes, but like you said, took two buses. Like, you would think that they'd have a bus run right to the stadium, right?
Yeah.
You would think.
Like, what's going on in Eugene on, you know, 7 Saturdays a year? Well, let's have the Downtown Express, right? No, apparently not. I don't know. Anyway, Ross has seen a redwood stand alone. Dan Lanning, we wait your response. I want the address. Let's give me the address after the show. We don't want to, it's probably something. We don't want to.
Of it.
Do you have a picture of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said he took a picture.
Tweet the picture out at Ross Dellinger. And then, and we can Google map it and show that it's a real thing. Anyway, these people are crazy. All right, I want to do this. What if the 12-team playoff was this year?
There it is,
Dan. Yeah, we have 4-team.
There it is. No, I'm showing it on the Zoom. Look. Look at that redwood. Look at that thing. Right in the middle of somebody's yard.
What is wrong with that tree? There's a big gap in it.
I don't know. It's
not a redwood. Is that a redwood?
Yeah, huh?
I think that's just a big tree. I don't know what a redwood looks like.
I don't know.
They got no redwoods in
Detroit. Let me see this thing. I've been to the Muir Forest in California.
No,
I know a redwood.
In Detroit?
I don't think that's a redwood.
Damn it. Scratch all of that. Dan Lanning didn't lie.
It's just a big tree.
It's a big tree.
A big tree, but not a redwood.
Yeah.
Coast boy, this southern coast boy, he doesn't know what a redwood is. You know, I just see a tall tree. I'm like, redwood!
One more victory for Dan Lanning.
That's
He's
right.
about wins, not clicks. You're doing it for clicks, calling random trees redwoods. The mighty redwood. Do not disrespect.
Did y'all see the video that Oregon, you may have mentioned it. Did you mention it earlier, Dan, the video that Oregon put out?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the movie.
Oh my God.
A video. It's almost 6 minutes long.
Unbelievable. they put closed caption to the trash talking of Colorado players on the field pregame.
Martin Scorsese did this thing. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Right. Imagine we had a 12-team playoff this year. I did some calculations.
Mm.
I did some projections. So don't hate me if I got to project a little bit. I used the rankings, but obviously we can't just do with the rankings now because like there's not going to be 5 Pac-12 teams in this thing, all right? This is what I came up with. So if you're, I'm projecting a few victories, losses, but you know, hate me for whatever. Just imagine what we would have this year. And I went with the AP poll at the top. Georgia 1, Michigan 2, Texas 3, Florida State 4. And when I go through this, you'll see how imperative it is that this little committee ditches their bowl buddies and gives the quarterfinals to home game home sites. Because this could be, like, let me give you your four home sites in the quarterfinals.
Happen,
could
Dan.
Be
Not
Georgia,
happen.
Michigan, Texas, and Florida State. The bowl industry is screwing you people again. You're going to come my way eventually. Yep. Like, imagine quarterfinal sites at Georgia, Michigan, Texas, and Florida State saying, nah. That University of Phoenix Stadium is just much better of a place to watch a game.
Georgia wouldn't like to have Penn State come in between the hedges. Not when you can go
Let's
play.
Let's go to Hard Glendale. Rock Stadium, surrounded by parking lots, and it's much better than the Big House. Come on. Like, Damn. Seriously. Anyway, I know Damn. They're not going to do it. I know. Damn. I know. They took too much Damn. Money from their cronies.
Dan, if you keep crapping on the Bulls, they're not going to send you free stuff.
They send me nothing. They hate me. You know how I knew the Bulls were corrupt? The Sugar Bowl sent me this Christmas gift. This was X number of years ago. It's the 75th anniversary. They sent me this huge, I get this huge package shows up. It's this Christmas gift from the Sugar Bowl. And it's this huge coffee table book. And it retailed for like $60 or something. It was the nicest gift I got that Christmas. The most expensive gift I received that Christmas was from the Sugar Bowl. And I literally sat there and go, how much money do these people have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I started looking, and I've been waging a war on them for 15 years over that. So don't send me a gift, because you know what it might spur. I don't sit there and go, oh, that's nice of them. Go, what? How corrupt is this? Why am I getting a gift from these people? Turned out they gave gift to us. They weren't doing a whole lot of their little charitable contributions they were claiming. It's interesting. Anyway, bowl industry screwing us out of some great home games, but that will change when everyone sees this. Okay, here's the first round. Oregon hosts Fresno State. How'd you like that one?
Look out, Doc.
Alabama, 11 seed Alabama at number 6 Ohio State.
Oh, yeah, that wouldn't do well. That wouldn't be fun.
Oh, no interest in that.
Yeah.
Or it could be LSU. I didn't know Bama. Yeah, whatever. One of those two in the shoe? No interest.
Yeah.
Number 10, USC travels to Washington. So that would be kind of a rematcher, but whatever. I do have LSU here. Number 9, yeah. LSU at number 8, Penn State.
Fantastic.
That's what I got. If your team got screwed out of my thing, it's...
You created a Big Ten fever dream there. You got Alabama playing in Columbus and LSU playing in State College in the winter. That's like all they ever talk about. Oh, why don't they ever come up here and play us when it's cold? Yeah. Well,
And then Fresno, Oregon winner would go play Florida State, but not in Tallahassee. You're going to be sitting there in Florida State going, no, we want him here.
Yeah.
You'd have Alabama, Ohio State winner go play Texas. You'd have the USC-Washington winner go play Michigan, and you'd have LSU-Penn State winner go play Georgia.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It took this long for them not to finally get almost here.
Mm-hmm.
They're still going to screw it up a little, because they just can't help themselves.
Yeah.
I think that would be pretty exciting. It's going to be wild next year. It's going to be wild.
It will be wild. And that... You know, that's the thing we've been talking about throughout this season. Like, the interest is going up right now. Wait until next year when we get this. I just can't even believe what the interest level is going to be nationally.
Yeah. All right. We have one other good coach's comment. There was some concern that the Florida was kicking off at noon against Kentucky this weekend. So some industrious reporter down in Kentucky. Early game. They hate the early games in the SEC. Asked Coach Mark Stoops, Wildcat Coach Mark Stoops, if he was worried it would affect the crowd from showing up. Mark Stoops, I have great confidence the people of Kentucky can get up very early and pound some beers. Why would you disrespect this great state and people? Pat, agree?
Oh, the state of Kentucky can get up and pound some beers. Are you kidding? And look, they, like, if that's a concern, go out to Colorado where this will be another 10 a.m. kickoff this week. And they're up at 8 pounding some beers. But in Kentucky, look, this is what your derby training. You fall back on that, right? In difficult times, you fall back on your training, your conditioning. Everybody who's been to the Kentucky Derby, you get up and pound some beers. So noon kickoff, not a problem, especially when the Gators come in. They'll be ready. They'll be pounding some bourbon early.
All right. Finally, you know, we do celebrate other national championships here. Much of it brought to us by the Sickos Committee. It's a great follow online. I did not know this was a sport. We're not talking about like volleyball and stuff. We know that's a sport. There was something called the College Blade Sport National Championship. Blade Sport. And it involves getting a machete and hacking wood. I don't know how you score. You've seen this video. Pat, you sent it to us. Cletus Johnson of Texas Tech is the national champ in blade sport. You cut different things. Like, it looks like they hack, like, I mean, everything. Ropes, wood, like little, they roll balls down a thing, and you got to hit it on the number with the machete. Pat, what is this sport, and how concerned are you? I mean, breaks glass with it? How do you get good at this?
That's a good question there.
Chopping
wood.
Concerning
one.
Cletus.
If Cletus Johnson from Texas Tech, if that isn't your blade sport champion, I don't know who should be.
Cletus.
I mean, that is on brand. Cletus Johnson from Texas Tech.
They don't have a lot of trees out there, though.
You can find some wood, man. You can get some sagebrush or whatever. Hack away at it.
Bet they don't stand alone.
Oil rig.
Very good point. Very good point. No, this is a perfect, like, on brand. This isn't like where you had those like dairy agrarian national champions from like Rutgers and stuff or Cornell. No. This is on brand. Texas Tech should win the Blade Sport Championship. Unless it's somebody from Florida, since they have all the machetes down there.
Ross, scared of this thing?
Yeah, I'm scared of it. I don't understand it either. I don't know. Is there a sport for everything? My God, I just won a championship for everything.
Okay,
this video, crazy.
The video, there's like five people, it looks like, sitting under like an awning or whatever, dude.
It's like at a town park, and there's like a trailer in the back. Some people are having like a couple beer, like a couple coffee or something.
Man.
There's a broom. The guy who's the judge has different colored socks. I'm going to tweet this out at Dan Wetzel. It's sponsored. It has a corporate sponsor, Smoky Mountain Knife Works.
Oh, perfect.
Yep. Absolutely. And then it looks like he hacks a tennis ball and, like, is that a ping pong ball? Like, I don't know. Also, Blade Sports. There's a couple other sponsors. I don't know what this is. I don't clearly not a big attendance. I believe there's eight people at this.
Maybe eight.
This thing is just unbelievable.
Yeah. And again, yes. How do you become good at it? I'm not sure. I want to know. And then imagine like telling your family, "Hey, I'm going to be in the Blade Sport National Championship. Can you please come watch me?"
Yeah,
I would.
The what now?
What are you doing? I mean,
at a park in Clovis, New Mexico.
Cletus, don't hurt yourself with those blades.
Cletus is he's going to be in one of these viral videos later. Like, someone's going to try to carjack him. He's going to step out of the car with a machete and wheel it around, and then they're all going to run. And you're like, how do you get so good at a machete? And you're like, you messed with the wrong Cletus, man. Trying to carjack
the wrong Cletus.
This is the most impressive. Heisman. Oh, yeah. Well, there's going to be a whole bunch of them now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Everybody's like, girl, to name their baby after the Blade King.
Right. Like 18 years after Shaq burst on the scene, all of a sudden there's a million Shaqs out there. It was yeah, Cletus. Anyway, congrats to Cletus. We'll send this out. It's the most, I don't even know how to describe it. I still don't know how they score. I guess if you hit the tennis ball in one shot. I mean, you imagine they're rolling a tennis ball and a ping pong ball, and you take a machete and cut that thing in one shot. That is some serious.
That's pretty skillful.
All right hand. Just the left hand just sits there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, clearly that's our show. We'll be back, race for the case, later in the week. We'll talk some more games and get on with. Appreciate everyone listening. Continue to support us, telling your friends about us, sharing us on social media, leaving nice reviews, all the things I usually mention. And we will talk to you later.